Today I'm going to talk about excuses. If anyone reads the headlines today, I don't care what paper, I don't care what website, what you find is people blaming other people, denying the truth, they're just ignoring what's happening, right? And this is not a new phenomenon, even though I find it very disheartening, but this goes on. This has gone on for centuries. So I'm going to dive into Ezekiel today, chapters 8 through 19, because in Ezekiel, Ezekiel actually is presented by with 8 excuses by the Israelites who are in captivity in Babylon. Okay, so let me get all that spit out. Let me see if I can get this baby to work. Okay, so I'm going to give you a little bit of background here. First, when I say Israelites, remember, the northern kingdom has already been conquered by Assyria, and they've basically been absorbed to that culture. It might be more appropriate to call this people the Jews or the Judahites, but because God made promises to the Israelites, I use the term Israelites, so that's what I'm doing there. But big picture, okay? God's going to punish now Judah for its sins. He already taken care of the northern kingdom. So around 739 BC, Isaiah begins to prophesy about what's going to happen to Judah down the road. And interestingly enough, in his prophecy, Isaiah talks about God whistling for the people. Whistles, you know, like to show that he is in command, what's going on. He whistles and he calls Babylon these instruments. So Babylon is going to come down and they're going to invade Israel 3 times between 605 and 806, and sorry, 586. And finally, the last invasion, they're going to destroy Solomon's temple to the ground. They're going to raise it, they're going to destroy the whole city. Very hard message that people did not want to hear. But after the first and the second invasion, before the third, God actually wants to warn the Israelites again. So he has 2 prophets going on. One who is in Jerusalem, right? That's Jeremiah. But the other one who's already been in captivity in Babylon, and that's Ezekiel. So that's like the big picture background here. Okay, so why isn't this showing up? There we go. Okay. I'm going to go through a 12-year background, but we're only going to talk about a little bit in there. So in 605 BC, the Babylonians defeat Egypt. Now, Israel had an agreement with Egypt that the Lord just destroyed. So after the Egyptians were destroyed, Jehoiakim, with an M, he begins to pay tribute to Babylon. Along with that, Nebuchadnezzar actually takes some of Jerusalem's nobility back to Babylon. So this is when Daniel was first exiled. Okay. A few years later, 597 BC, Jehoiakim rebels. So now the Babylonians are a little bit upset. They come down, they capture it a second time. And this time they deport a whole lot of people from Jerusalem into Babylon. In fact, they take all the nobility, all the teachers, all the smart people, and they leave basically the poor people with no leadership. In this time, Zedekiah becomes king. Sorry. And Zedekiah, he's a bad guy. Okay. He's like the kings before him. He does all those bad things, including child sacrifice to the idol gods and all that kind of stuff. So he's just a bad guy, and God has had it up to here with him. And then in 593 BC, Ezekiel, now down in Babylon, is beginning to prophesy to the people in Babylon about what's going to happen. Okay. Here is just a brief timeline. You can tell in red where we're going to focus. I'm not going to go through all this, but this is basically how the book of Ezekiel is laid out. I know Ezekiel's not a very popular book because it's kind of a hard message and some people find it obsolete, but like any book in the Bible, when you dive in, there's all kinds of stuff to learn, all kinds of, the more you study, the more you learn, the more you realize, the less you know. Anyways, okay. So talking about basically chapters 8 to 19 in Ezekiel. A little more background. So after his commissioning in 593 BC, Ezekiel begins to prophesy about the upcoming fall of Jerusalem. Okay, he gains attention from the people by a very, very odd charade. Okay, he lays on his left side for 390 days, right? Lays on his side. And God actually talks about how God's going to help him do that by basically paralleling him and making his point there. Then after that, he has to lay on the other side for 40 days. So this is a symbol of the amount of time that the Israelites are going to be in exile out of Jerusalem, right? 430 years. Now, the Israelites, they did not want to hear what Ezekiel was saying. It's not the program they wanted. So like we do today, they ignore, they deny, they come up with all kinds of excuses. But they also listen to some false prophets. They listen to some false prophets because the false prophets are telling them what they want to hear, telling good news. False prophets have been around in Jerusalem for quite a while now. It's a real problem. Okay. So now let's go through the eight excuses. Here they are in order, and we'll dive into it. First one is denial. It's not going to happen. By the it's the fall of Jerusalem. Not going to happen. Next thing is, we don't need to worry about it. It's too far in the future. Next one is, no. We are going to be at peace with Jerusalem. Next one, all right, maybe it is a problem, but we're going to blame somebody. Let's blame old elders. They did this. Then, wait a minute, we should be saved because we are under the covenant of God. Remember the Mosaic covenant. Nah, let's move on. Wait a second. Yeah. The Lord can't punish us for what other generations did. Maybe that doesn't work. How about, well, if judgment is truly coming, what's the point in repenting? It's going to happen anyway. Finally, you know, we don't need to worry. We're going to have a new king from the line of David going to come and save us. Okay, so these are the excuses that are going on in chapters 8 through 19 of Ezekiel. So not all the excuses that the Israelites are offered are explicitly stated in Ezekiel. Some you can only understand by listening to God's response to the unstated excuse, but it's pretty clear. In Ezekiel 12:21, the Lord replies to the first of these excuses with an absolute demolishing response. You know, you give God an excuse, watch out. As we move along through all eight excuses, the Lord's response to them is devastating. You know, it's like, at some point, please stop making the excuses. So we ought all take a lesson on that one. Okay, I don't know about you guys, but everything's going on. Okay, excuse number one is called denial. It won't happen to us. The word of the, and this is from Ezekiel 12:21. The word of the Lord came to me, son of man, what is this proverb you have in the land of Israel? The days go by and every vision comes to nothing. Okay, so this proverb means the things that were foretold by the prophets always turn out to be false because life goes on unchanged. False prophets have been victimizing Israel for centuries. The people have become accustomed to taking such predictions with a grain of salt, you know, because it never happened. They deny that such a dramatic judgment awaits them. And their confidence is based on the fact that no one can ever remember such a bad thing happening. Okay, so can't happen. Denial. Okay, so God has a response for them. Couple verses later, say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I'm going to put an end to this proverb, and they will no longer quote it in Israel. Say to them, the days are near when every vision will be fulfilled. For there will be no more false visions or flattering divinations among the people of Israel. All right, so the Lord says, I'm going to cut that stuff out. To be clear, when he said that there would be no more of those false visions and flatteries. He had a plan. It's going to be revealed in a minute. I'll show you when we get to the next one what he's going to do. Okay. The second excuse, pretty aligned with the first one. First is denial, and it's delayed. It's not going to happen for a long, long time in the future. Second excuse follows. It's in verse 27, immediately after the Lord's response to verse 1. Excuse 1. Son of man, the Israelites are saying the vision he sees is for many years from now, and he prophesies about the distant future. In other words, the Israelites are saying, who cares? It's way down the road. It's like, you know, the sun is going to explode in a billion years. I'm not going to worry about it. Okay. In the second excuse, the Israelites acknowledged that the prophet spoke the truth, but the fulfillment was so far away, there's no point in really worrying about it. That's the second excuse. Oh, the Lord has a response. This is in verse 29, still in chapter 12. But I, the Lord, will speak what I will, and it shall be fulfilled without delay. For in your days, you rebellious people, I will fulfill whatever I say, declares the Lord. So he's coming down on them saying, you guys are going to get to this time. He goes on in the next chapter a little bit more because he wanted to follow up on this thing about there won't be any more false prophets. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Because of your false words and lying visions, he's talking to the prophet, the false prophets, I'm against you, declares the sovereign Lord. My hand will be against the prophets who see false visions and utter lying divinations. They will not belong to the council of my people or be listed in the records of Israel, nor will they enter the land of Israel. Then you will know I'm the Lord. All right, so there's some talk there, but what happened? The Lord actually killed every false prophet and wiped their names out of the records of Israel so their families could never go back. Oh, ouch. Okay. Really is. But he continues now. Therefore, say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. None of my words will be delayed any longer. Whatever I say will be fulfilled, declares the Lord. So remember, the people saying it's going to happen way in the future, way in the future, way in the future, way in the future. He's saying, oh no, it's not. You're going to see it. So in verse 28, the Lord simply says that none of his words are going to be delayed. In other words, this prophecy of Ezekiel, it's going to happen and they're going to see it. He'll speak to near-term events and he'll bring them to pass, and the people won't be able to claim that his word isn't relevant. In other words, they can't say Ezekiel was talking a bunch of stuff. Okay, excuse number 3, don't you love it? We're going to have peace. Here's what the Lord says. We're still in chapter now in 13. Because they lead my people astray, saying peace when there is no peace, and because when a flimsy wall is built, they cover it with whitewash. Okay, the whitewash is a little bit weird, but we'll get to it. Here's what's going on. The people didn't like what Ezekiel was saying. So instead, they listened to the prophets, the false prophets, because the false prophets were saying that Jerusalem's future was going to be one of peace. They were claiming, the people, that Ezekiel's, his prophecies were being superseded by these false prophets. Good. Excuse number 3 is believing only what we prefer to believe, dismissing contrary evidence, even when it's compelling, because we don't want to accept hard truth. We build our foundation by whitewashing a broken bit of plaster. So what the Israelites understood is that God was saying, you know, you've got a problem with the wall around Jerusalem. Instead of fixing it, you put some plaster and whitewash on it, and you go stand on that. That wall is not going to stand. So that's excuse number 3. We're going to have peace. The Lord's response, therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says. In my wrath, I will unleash a violent wind, and in my anger, hailstones and torrents of rain will fall with destructive fury. I will tear down the wall you've covered with whitewashing, will level it to the ground so that the foundation will be laid bare, When it falls, you will be destroyed in it, and you will know I am the Lord. So I will pour out my wrath against the wall and against those who covered it with whitewash. I will say to you, the wall is gone, and so are those who whitewashed it. Those prophets of Israel who prophesied to Jerusalem and saw visions of peace for her when there was no peace, declares the sovereign Lord. Okay. But they didn't listen. It gets worse. Here's a new excuse. Let's do blame the former people. Okay. Some of the elders of Israel came to me and sat down in front of me. Then the word of the Lord came to me, son of man, these men have set up idols in their hearts and put wicked stumbling blocks before their faces. Should I let them inquire of me? Okay, so God is telling Ezekiel, I'm not going to let these guys talk to me. But they want to come and ask my guidance? The current corrupt elders of Israel came to Ezekiel to say, God should only blame those old leaders for their idolatry and disobedience to the covenant. They expected to be excused for their own disobedience because they were only following their elders' examples. Okay. But God didn't even wait for them to speak. He had Ezekiel address them with a truly harsh pronouncement. Here we go. This is 7. Now I'm figuring the chapter 15. When any of the Israelites or any foreigner residing in Israel separate themselves from me and set up idols in their hearts and put a wicked stumbling block before their faces, and then go to a prophet to inquire of me, I, the Lord, will answer them myself. I will set my face against them and make them an example in a byword. I will remove them from my people. Then you will know I am the Lord. There's another pretty harsh pronouncement, right? It's a hard reality check. And Scott's saying, don't blame anybody else. He looks at every single individual and judges them. And he wanted to break the stronghold of idolatry in the hearts of all the people of the Israelites. Anyone who continued to face that, or continued to do idol worship, was going to face a judgment. Sorry. Okay. There's a little bit more to his response. Then I passed by and saw you kicking about in your blood. And as you lay there in your blood, I said to you, live. So we've jumped to verse 16. What's going on here is that God has talked about this in the previous chapter. It's kind of interesting, but he's basically saying, Israel, you are like a child who was deserted by its mother, didn't even cut the cord, just dropped in the wilderness. You are laying in your own blood and you are going to die. Then I saw you and I said, live. In other words, he's saying to Israel, the only reason you're here is because I decided to save you. So he uses this allegory to explain why Israel's covenant relationship isn't a shield, but rather assured. So the allegory about that basically is, look where you were, look what you've done. You deserve death. That's what that allegory meant. The old covenant promised Israel great blessing in the future kingdom, but it also included severe penalties for the nation if they failed to keep the terms. And they failed the most basic first one about, I am the Lord, your God, you have no idols before me. They failed the very first one. They were going to continue to experience the penalties. That's what God was telling them and all this kind of stuff. Okay. Excuse number 6. The Lord can't punish this generation for what previous generations did, right? That should be on them. So let's go back to 5 for a second. Israel's excuse number 5 was that the Lord's covenant with Israel prevented him from executing judgment, so they had nothing to worry about. The Lord's response to that was to review in detail all the sins of the previous generations, which justified his judgment, But all of that just made them generate a new excuse. Yeah, that's all about those guys in the past. So the new excuse was that the Lord can't punish us for them. Now, excuse number six, it's not stated in the text explicitly. You have to read the response and then you can figure out that's what God was responding to. We're now in chapter 17, verse 1. The word of the Lord came to me, Son of Man, set forth an allegory and tell it to the Israelites as a parable. Okay. So there is this very long parable. I'm not going to go into it. A couple of eagles and all this kind of stuff, a fly and branch. You can go read it. It's pretty interesting. But the Lord explains the riddle in the prophecy in chapter 17. And as he interprets it, he shows the current generation is just as bad as all the previous generations, and then he's going to punish them. Remember, I told you about Zedekiah being just as bad as everybody else. That's this generation. He points out, interestingly enough, that when the world looks at Babylon's defeat of Judah, it's simply going to be a big country against a little country and a big country. Okay. But the Lord adds a theological interpretation to those same events for Israel's sake, for us to hear. The Lord would ensure that this final defeat would wipe Israel off the map for a while. Wiped right off the map. The Lord said that when these things happen, they will know he has spoken. Okay, so his response is, I'm gonna make the country go away. But he also, in the same parable, said Israel is still going to have a day of glory. So we all know that, right? Okay. Number seven. Almost on time. Number seven. If judgment is truly coming, there's no reason to repent. Okay. So the folks are saying, if there's nothing, if we're going to suffer anyway, there's no point in us repenting. We're going to pay for the sins because we can't change the past, so be it. But God offers amazing grace. The reason I did the second hymn up there, because God is love, God gives grace, even when we are awful. Okay. So God says to the Israelites in their response about judgment is truly coming, nothing for me to do. He says, but if a wicked person turns away from all the sins they have committed and keeps all my decrees and does what is just and right, that person will surely live. They will not die. Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Mm-hmm. The Lord's response, of course, is that repentance varies. It matters very much because it's the only way that the wicked, the only way that we can save our lives. All right. I cheated that twice. Okay. Still, even after all that, the Israelites complain, right? Here's what God responds to their complaint. Yet you say, the way of the Lord is not just. Hear me, you Israelites, is my way unjust? Is it not your ways that are unjust? So God is challenging them to look at what he does compared to what they do. Okay? We complain. He shows grace. Finally, a king will save us. Okay, so you know that the Jews always wanted kings. As bad as we are, we don't even worry about it. A king is going to come and save us, so we won't be destroyed. It's the final excuse to ignore Ezekiel. Somehow, a new king is going to come to the throne in the line of David. We'll be able to vanquish the whole Babylonian army just like that. Okay? It was fantasy, of course, and it just reflects how self-deceived the people were. Since after two attacks already, should be pretty obvious to everyone that no king is going to resurrect them to the glory of Israel. You know, these circumstances won't allow that. But God's response is even more devastating, okay? He dismisses their hope of a new king that's going to come and save the day. He sends them a lamentation in Ezekiel 19. The whole chapter 19 is just a lamentation about how sad this all is. And that lamentation talks about, excuse me, the end of the Davidic line of kings. Till the second coming. So, eight excuses, eight devastating responses. Yeah. What's your guys' take? I'll tell you what. All right, that's what I got. Thank you, man. I have a question.
Now, and you going through this, did you come to any application of these excuses that could be, you know, applied to?
Oh, yeah. Read the news today. We got people saying all kinds of ridiculous stuff, right? A man can have a baby. There's 25 genders. There's this, that, and the other thing. Don't believe the proof. Don't believe that. These are all excuses. What we as Christians are supposed to do is say, wait a minute, we are sinners. There is going to be a judgment coming. It's coming. And God help those who don't listen to his word, but he won't help them. God will help those who listen to his word. Yeah. That's us. Listen to his word.
So I have two things. One, so how do you become a false prophet? I mean, was there like a office of prophet? These prophets, no problem. Some are good, some are bad. How did they get the distinction of being a prophet?
Just watch TV. Exactly. So how did any prophet just announce, hey, the Lord spoke to me? That's all.
Okay. So the second thing is, I know that, you know, God just abhors idolatry.
Yes.
Yeah. So obviously, idolatry is still a sin. It's still practiced. So what do you think is the biggest idolatry in our country?
That's a good question. So I will answer it this way, right? The first commandment talks about idolatry because it's the first commandment. It's really important. What does Satan do? Satan looks into the heart of each and every one of us and says, what can I make that person hold up as an idol?
Yeah.
So Satan takes it, you know, he says, I am going to try, and he goes down his list. Maybe there's some kind of an addiction. Maybe there's some kind of power. Maybe there's some kind of sexual thing. Maybe there's something else. He just goes through them all, and guess what? Eventually, he finds one, and we fall right into the trap.
Well, let me make a proposal.
Okay.
Okay. I think science is the number one. I do. It takes the place of God.
Yep.
And when Fauci said, I am the science,
yep.
What is he saying?
Okay. My counter to that would be, we don't believe science because we think there's more than two genders. So for some of us, it would be science. For some of us, it would be power, selfishness, deceit. I don't know. The list goes on and on.
It's a long list. Every person.
Ed's question really is one for Bob. You know, there's a personal application. I mean, each one of us, you know, has to look at our idolatry. What my thought was, you know, is the inherent issue is self as opposed to God.
Right.
We idolize ourself as opposed to God, and because of that, you know, we look for power, look for importance, look for, you know.
That's Satan's job.
Yeah.
That's all it is, Satan's job to do that.
Yeah. You could have an interesting
way in a lot.
You could have an interesting discussion about what is there a root sin, right? Is there one at the very bottom? But that's a different thing.
Yeah. mentioned it. Could Muhammad be at the top of the list of false prophets?
Well, he sure could be. In fact, I think when Jacob kicked his son out, God pretty much said, that guy's going to be a thorn in the side of Israel forever. Mm-hmm. Still haven't. Okay, we're late.
Thank you, man.
You bet.
Thanks, man. Yeah.